Welcome to Emil Franzing's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of warriors.
Of course they were. That just goes without saying. I mean, come on. Welcome. It's another edition of Emil Franzing's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander. Bunker de France is across the way. And in Los Angeles, I think he's not on an island anymore, Todd Roberts.
Hello, gentlemen. It is great to be with you both.
Yes.
And no, I am not on an island.
Go good.
Although no man is an island.
That is surrounded by water. I'm on an island that is surrounded by insanity.
Well, aren't we all?
That's California.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We are, let's see, our guest today is Chilton Williamson. He's an author, Western Writers of America Spur Award finalist, and he's got a lot of stuff, and we're going to get to him in just a moment. Do you want to do the bunkhouse first?
Oh, okay, well, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse is going to be The Good, the Bad, and the Bovine. But before I do that, I've got a couple of small obituaries here, passings. Wesley Cecil Roball, he was a cowboy. He was a good friend of mine. We call him Wes. He was a journeyman lineman, a musician, playing the mandolin, wrote cowboy poetry, worked leather, and rode mules. He was an International Western Music Association member and a longtime friend. And the other person that we just lost here just a few weeks ago, Sherry Monahan. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you do now.
Wow.
Anyhow, she, back in March 14, 2015, Sherry, Cindy Moulton, and Johnny Boggs were guests on the show from the Tucson Festival of Books. Anyway, she passed away on June 28th. She was a past WWA president, three times Will Roger Medallion Award winner in 2018. That's just in 1 year.
Yeah.
A true lover of the West, and she will be truly missed.
Boy, oh boy.
Now, for the silly part of the show. And just so Chilton knows, I'll have to explain this to you because this is very intricate. The Good, Bad, and the Bovine is what I do is I take today's date, which in this case is August 1st, and I go back 3 days in time, and I go forward 3 days in time. But I don't go into the future. I go into the past, into the future time. And I'm going to start with, what did I do? Oh, it's over here. Yeah, I had the wrong piece of paper. Okay, I'm going to start.
Well, at least you got the paper this
time.
Yes,
I do. July 29, 1945. The heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine. It is famous for completing a top secret mission to deliver atomic bomb parts, and we know what happened with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
On July 30, 1609, the Beaver Wars at Fort Ticonderoga was going on. Samuel D. Champagne shoots and kills two Iroquois chiefs with a single shot from his arquebus on behalf of his native allies. That's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
Two birds with one shot.
Why not?
Anyhow, now we're going to move into July 31st, 1763. Ottawa Chief Pontiac, his forces defeat British troops at the Battle of Bloody Run when a troop of about 250 British combatants attempt a surprise attack on his encampment. Doesn't work. They got their ass kicked. August 1st, 1801, it's in the First Barbary War. The American schooner USS Enterprise engages in a single ship action against the Tripolitan. I can't say that either.
Tripoli.
Tripolitan, Wasaka.
From Tripoli.
And the name of the boat was Tripoli. And anyhow, they captured it off the coast of modern-day Libya, which back then was Tripoli.
Mm-hmm.
On August 2nd, 1776, there was a formal signing of the United States Declaration of Independence, which took place by the Second Continental Congress. August 3rd, 1527, this is cool. The first known letter from North America is sent by John Rutt, an English mariner, chosen by Henry VIII to command an expedition to North America in search of the Northwest Passage, and he mailed it from St. John's, Newfoundland.
And he's still waiting for it.
He's still waiting for it. It's in the mail. And the last date is August 4, 1790, the founding of the United States Revenue Cutter Service. It was the only armed maritime service of the United States at that time, as the Navy had been disbanded. The first 10 revenue cutters were built for combat, to combat smuggling and to enforce maritime laws. And that is it. That's all the snooze that's going to snooze you.
All right. And a big-time announcement here from Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We have a new home from which we are streaming, and live streaming, and it happens to be the Tucson Auto Museum. Now, what you're probably asking yourself, an auto museum in a Western podcast? Hey,
there's a Model T right
outside. There's a Model T sitting right outside us here. You know, so that was in the West. And, you know, our program is about history, and these automobiles are all about history.
And they have, are shiny.
Oh, man, they have over 70 vehicles, including a Model T, 29 Duesenberg Model J, 1957 Dual Ghia, cars that were used in the sets of Mannix, Charlie's Angels, and Batman. All of these are drivable as well, yes.
Don't forget Jack Benny.
Oh, and Jack Benny's big-time Packard is there. God bless, that's a beautiful automobile.
Oh, God. You think we'll let us sit on it after the show?
I wish. Yeah. I wish. But, so we're at the Tucson Auto Museum. I invite you to check them out. The website is pretty doggone easy, tucsonautomuseum.org. And let's see here. They're located at 4825 North Sabino Canyon Road. And
make sure you turn it to light.
Yeah. This is a cool place. Yeah, you ought to come out here and take a look at all these automobiles and support this museum. So with that, let us welcome Chilton Williamson to our program. Good day, sir.
I bet he thought we'd
Thank
never get
to. Thank you so much. I am very honored to be on your program.
Well, we're honored to have you.
I've been looking forward to this for several weeks now.
Cool.
You've been
beans.
Listening to us?
Yeah, right.
And you're doing the show anyway. God.
Yes.
Well, Todd, you're the guy who scored this fantastic gentleman. Take it away to the introduction.
Well, I can't take full credit. We were introduced by a mutual friend, which I believe was that Will Emmerich? Who introduced us, Chilton, exactly?
It was Chris Martini, the film director.
Yes, Chris Martini, the film director, absolutely, whose father was the great Stuart Margolin, who played Angel on The Rockford Files and also was in my father's film Death Wish with Charles Bronson.
And Nichols.
Yeah, he introduced us, and Chilton and I started talking, and he's just a very interesting fellow. First of all, he's a lover of the West. He writes about the West. He understands it because he knows more than just which end of the horse you ride and which end of the horse you look away from. And he's got an understanding of it because of personal experience. He also understands the East, shall we say, east of the Mississippi. There are those that believe that Easterners appreciate the West more than us Westerners do.
No.
The West. But he's just an interesting fella, and I just thought that he might bring some insight that we don't necessarily have explored in the past.
Mm-hmm. You mean glass and taste?
Here we have. Here we are. Here we are.
Okay, take it away.
Yeah, take it away, Todd.
Well, so, you know, Chilton, as I read The Last Westerner, your most recent book, which is very interesting, 2026 Spur Award for Best Contemporary Western, you know, I have to ask myself, where do you find this inspiration? I mean, are you getting in the car and driving around in the summer with your wife and looking at locations like Louis L'Amour did with his family, or
nothing like that. I've lived out west way more than half my life. I was raised in New York and Vermont. My parents bought a farm in southern Vermont, very, very rural Vermont, when I was five. And then I was raised in Manhattan, where my father taught at Columbia. So I had a deep city, deep country upbringing, and deep country went out, and I moved. So I decided to come to the real deep country, which is the West. I mean, forget the East. It's mainly a big suburb now.
It's lost.
And I fell in love with the West and came out and worked as a rigger on an oil rig in southwestern Wyoming, out of Kemmer, Wyoming, and did that for a year and then got married. And I've lived out here ever since. And I've been a magazine editor all of my career, which pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Writing books is not is not a surefire means of making a living. So I would write the books, and then I would I'd edit the magazine long distance, of course. And back in the late 80s and the 90s, I was working on a book, a nonfiction book that I provisionally titled Unsecured Territory, about the border, the southwestern Mexican border. And I spent a lot of time down there, and I would edit, first of all, National Review and then Chronicles from a motel room. But during the day, I was out investigating and driving around, spent a lot of time on Indian reservations, spent a lot of time on the border, spent a lot of time. And then, meanwhile, at home in Kemmer, I was my godparents were ranchers, so I was spending a lot of time helping them move cows and so forth. And I did a lot of hunting and so forth. But it was about 2 years or so that I was working on Unsecured Territories, which I never got published, by the way. Nobody in New York wasn't interested. But a lot of my experiences and the people I met while I was working on this project ended up being in a novel, which is The Last Westerner. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with the West. My first trip out here, my grandfather, Williamson, actually had a cattle ranch near Bozeman. But he sold it a year or two before I was born, because my grandmother, who was a proper Bostonian lady, didn't want to live out West. My grandfather did. She didn't, so he sold it. I was raised reading Loringle's Wilder and all of the, you know, all the diaries of mountain men and trappers and this sort of thing. And to me, the West is just, it's my home. It's my milieu. It's where I belong.
Well, reading your stuff, it's definitely your mindset. I was reading your... some people would call it political, but I call it philosophical writings. And I spent one whole day just going over that, and then yesterday I finished up going back to the nonfiction, and I was able to read book one, Jody, of The Westerner, and I really love the way you describe everything. My favorite is Zane Grey, and the way that he described, you have a touch. It's not like his. It's entirely different, but it's just as good as his.
As good as what?
As good as Zane Grey's.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, you know, Zane Grey is one of my favorite Western novelists of an earlier time.
Yes.
He was a beautiful stylist, and he was a real artist. He was a great writer, in my opinion.
You know, it's a funny thing. You know, I love cowboy poetry, but I could never wrap my head around this free verse that didn't rhyme.
I
came across a poem that was published in the Western Writers and Western Music Association thing. That was a free verse, but it reminded me so much of grass, and. But I had a light bulb come on, because I realized, because I had reread Riders of the Purple Sage, and I thought, Gray's description of the West is free verse, because what he does is he doesn't rhyme the words, he rhymes the images.
Hmm. Well, I call it prose poetry, and that's what I write. I hope I do. And this is part of what novelists and critics call modernism. You know, 19th century fiction reads like history, and the senses are like history. That they're writing, you know, you're writing history rather than fiction. And it was only beginning with the modernist writers in the early part of the 20th century that prose became a form of poetry. Ernest Hemingway was perhaps the first practitioner of this, and he influenced me a lot. But there are many other writers like that. Edward Abbey was one, whom I knew. Cormac McCarthy was one. The prose was as important as the content. It was, in fact, it was inseparable from the content, and that's how I work as a fiction writer.
Well, yeah, there's a passage in that first book of Jody where you're describing the melt from the mountains, and you travel it down through the redwoods into the stream, into the flood, and I thought that is so perfect. I loved it.
Well, you know, this book, Last Westerner, was rejected by about 25 or 26 publishers in New York. I have an agent there. One of them said, it's slow, and I know that's one of the passages he meant. I doubt he read any further. And then several years later, I suggested to Tony that he resubmit it to New York, and he did. He went to many of the same publishers, but of course the turnover in publishing in New York is so great that there was a whole different set of editors. And everyone rejected it again. I think it had to do with my realistic portrait of the Navajo Reservation, among other things, because the New York publishers think that, you know,
and they don't have
everything Native American is glorious and noble and so on and so forth.
Well, you weren't politically correct.
No, I was not politically correct. But the fact is that the character John Wayne Billigoti, the Navajo boy who accompanies my hero John Ryder, he's actually a composite of two 16-year-old Indian boys I knew, not just on those trips I was talking about earlier in the 90s, but later than that. One of them is a Navajo boy, and the other one is a Papago boy from the reservation just west of Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I was good friends for a while with a former tribal chairman there, and I spent a lot of time with the Indians, and these people were and are my friends.
Yeah. They're people just like everybody else.
Precisely.
We got to do our first commercial break here on Amo Franzi's Voices of the West. Our guest, Chilton Williamson, is an author, Western Writers of America Spur Award finalist. And when we come back, I'm going to find out what's wrong with the world, because that just intrigues me. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts. We'll be back in just a few shakes after this.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda, That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
I expect that Army contract's going to make me $150,000.
You mean us?
Oh, here, Daggett. You're getting these rustled horses, and you're getting a good price for them in foreign countries.
Yeah, sure. But by the time I rebrand and smuggle them aboard ship, I've lost half of my profit. I'm not in this thing for my health, you know.
This is the Voices of the West.
There's a rolling prairie and an old corral at the end of the canyon trail. There's a ranch boss waiting with a howdy pal at the end of the canyon trail.
We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France. Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. Our guest from Laramie, Wyoming is Chilton Williamson, author and all kinds of other things. I am wondering about your second column here that you've been writing. What's wrong with the world about contemporary manners and mores? I can give you bunches of things that might be wrong, but I'd like to hear from you, sir. What kinds of mores have we lost?
Well, that's not my current column. My current column is called Prejudices. Oh. It's after H.L. Mencken's famous books, Prejudices, which I write for the Spectator world.
American Spectator.
What I wrote What's Wrong with the World for Chronicles when I was working there.
Uh-huh.
The title is, again, a steal from G.K. Chesterton, the British writer in the first part of the 20th century. Well, there's a lot wrong with the world. A lot of it... in the United States, anyway, derives from the East Coast.
Yeah, do you think that as the country moved away from Victorian times, that the mores, from what I understand of the Old West, it was very Victorian. Well, not very, but it was Victorian. And, you know, men tipped their hat to the ladies and all that kind of stuff. And all that stuff is gone in the can.
And then World War One came along.
Well, yeah.
Well, yes. And Owen Wister's book, The Virginian, of course, was the first to reflect how that affected life in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and this actually... relates to my book, The Last Westerner, which is really a meditation. It's a picaresque novel Pickford's novel, you probably know, is really one damn thing after another. I mean, there's no real plot. There's just a story.
Yeah.
And I planned the book in a way on Cervantes' Don Quixote, which was actually a spoof on the chivalric writing of the times. But my book is a picaresque novel about a man who represents he's the last Westerner in the sense that he's the last traditional American Westerner, Western American, but he's also the last chivalric knight in a modern setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, of course, chivalry is actually goes against the grain of modern morals, modern relationships between men and women. And my book is a book about a man who embodies the old culture, the old Western culture, including chivalry toward women and toward children and toward toward the West itself, toward the landscape.
Sure.
Toward,
he's a man out of time. I have a question.
Yes, exactly.
I have a question for you. There's a segment in the book, Albert Orsino and Doe, and that is, I think, it needs to be touched on because I think there's a great deal of irony in that one.
In what sense?
Albert Orsino and and his relationship with Doe.
With Doe. Oh yes, yes, absolutely. I'm glad you touched on that because Albert Orsino, to clarify things, to put this in context, is a hare lip, more or less of a runt, not terribly bright. And he ends up, I won't get into it.
Sounds like some of our politicians.
It sounds like me.
Some of our politicians.
Yes, exactly. Well, he's a child of nature, and so is his girlfriend, who is a deaf mute and lives in the woods. She's a sort of sprite. And they get together at night, and she's totally and completely innocent. She dresses in a smock, a light smock, over absolutely nothing. And she comes and goes, and they have sexual relationships in his rundown house. But it's an example of innocent love, innocent chivalry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And his fate.
Yes. Yeah, he dies in a snake bite in his sleeping bag.
Wow.
Which is something I've always been very, very careful about.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of sleeping on the ground in my time. I have this in the book.
And Jeb is a snake whisperer, rattlesnake whisperer.
Yes, a snake whisperer. Albert Orsino, when he goes to bed at night, he's sleeping on the ground, extends a lariat around the sleeping bag. I don't know if this is Indian or not. I don't think it is. If so, it's multi-tribal, intertribal.
It's an old cowboy myth.
It's a myth.
Here in Wyoming all the time.
Yeah.
If you put a lariat around your sleeping bag, a snake won't slither over it because he doesn't like the feel of the rope.
Yeah, well,
I don't know whether that's
been debunked.
Did they?
Yeah.
And they tested it, and the snake scrawled back and forth.
Well, I'm out in the desert or anywhere. I sleep in a tent, or I sleep on an army cot. Mm-hmm. That I carry with me. Of course, I can't take that on horseback. If I'm
one of the old canvas cots?
The back of my pickup.
Yeah.
I always sleep off the ground.
Yeah.
Ed Abbey did that, too. And I was a good friend of his. And he always had a cot when he could when he could manage it.
Speaking of Abbey, I understand you made a pilgrimage to the approximate grave site. Tell us about that experience, because...
I will. This happened... this happened 10 years after Ed's death. He died in 89. And I was living in Las Cruces for 97 to 99, working on several literary projects. One of them was ended up being turned out to be this book. I had a good friend who's unfortunately dead now. He died not many years ago, named Tom Sheely, who was a classical musician, classical Spanish musician, guitarist, classical guitar, who taught music at Northern Arizona State University. And he had known Ed years and years before when they were both on river trips down the Colorado. And Tom pulled an oar, and he also provided entertainment at night with his guitar, of which he carried his second best in a bomb-proof case down the river, and he would entertain the tourists in the evening. But he also was a fabulous camp cook. Anyway, he made a number of float trips where he was working, and then Ed Abbey was along because he talked about the geology of the canyon and so on and so forth. And I had known Ed in the last several years of his life. So we decided that we would meet in Tucson and drive out into the desert and find Ed's grave. Well, I was friends with his last father-in-law. He had five wives, named Steve Prescott, Dr. Steve Prescott, for the University of Utah. And he was one of the three pallbearers, so to speak, who brought Ed's body out from Tucson and, according to his will, his specification, wrapped in his old sleeping bag in the back of his old pickup truck. And Steve and Doug Peacock, who was one of Ed's closest friends, he's a specialist in grizzly bears, and Tom and I drove out there, and I called Prescott ahead of time and said, could you give me instructions? And he said, well, it's been 10 years, but I think I can give you a pretty good idea. So we drove across the Papago Reservation, and we got to Oregon Pipe National Monument.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove out into the desert, and I'm pretty certain we found it. We couldn't be absolutely certain because the Caliche Bank had collapsed above Ed's grave. He specified that he wanted to be buried deep enough to have rocks piled on so that the coyotes couldn't get to his body. But what had happened was at this site where he was buried, the Caliche Bank had just collapsed. He was now buried under 7 or 8 feet, but he's buried under about 30 feet. And so Tom and I had brought some beer out to pour on his grave. Well, the time came, and we either drunk the beer or we left it in Tucson. I can't remember. But we built up a raging fire, and Tom made one of his best outdoor meals, and then he played his guitar all night long, and we heard the coyotes were howling. It was really lovely.
Cool.
It was
that's
really
cool.
Wonderful. But I'm sure that's his grave.
Awesome. Oh, cool. And, of course, you will never reveal where that location is because that's...
Well, I would if I could... Well, it doesn't make any difference now.
Yeah, I know. For sure. But Edward did not want to have that location named.
No, I suppose he didn't. Well, he had... requested that something be put on his grave, and a stone or something.
Mm-hmm.
But his widow, Clark, requested that it be removed because she was afraid that one of his acolytes or fans, one of the crazier ones, would come out and try to dig him up and take his skull for an ashtray.
Yeah.
All traces. There was a little stone that said, here lies Ed Abbey. But mm-hmm. that got removed.
Okay. All right, we got to do our next commercial break here. On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. And our guest, Jilton Williamson, is an author. And we'll be talking with him much more after these important messages. Stay tuned.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Well, Doc, there must be somebody lying sick or bleeding around here.
Well, now, if you just can't stand to see me getting a few minutes' hard-earned rest, why don't you go out and shoot somebody?
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France in Los Angeles. It is Todd Roberts. Our guest is Chilton Williamson, author. And before we get to anything further, I have to tell you, Chilton, the reason we played that, I'm hoping you recognize that theme, from the High Chaparral. Mr. de France, across the table from me, was in like 52, 54 episodes of that iconic Western. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't play it, I leave.
Yeah, there is that. Before we get going, I need to remind you about the 150th anniversary of the Empire Ranch. It's a big time celebration happening August 22nd. That's a Saturday, and it'll be from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. By golly, it's a free event. So what you're going to find out? Well, you're going to hear about the Danger Road, the perils of travel through the Sonoyta Valley, presented by Rick Collins. Then you're also going to hear about ranch history presentations throughout the house, Hollywood and the Empire, special movie exhibits, strolling musicians. And then later on, you'll hear about Walter Vail, the guy who founded the Empire, Arizona and California rancher, and a book signing by the historian Allison Bunting. Closing remarks follow. Enjoy a piece of cake and iced tea, because that's all you're going to get.
And our representative will be there to, Steve, what's his name, Steve Christie?
No, I have no idea.
I can't remember.
Anyway. Anywho, celebrating the history, preserving the future, that's what this is all about. The historic Empire Ranch is on East Empire Ranch Road down in Sonoyta. You can find out more, EmpireRanchFoundation.org, or if you just want to drive on down there, take the Highway 83 off of Interstate 10 and just follow the signs to the Empire.
That's right.
Also need to tell you that we are doing our live stream from a new home, the Tucson Auto Museum. Autos in the West? Well, yeah.
Flivvers. It's all flivvers.
It happens. You know, it did happen.
If you've seen a Gene Autry or a Roy Rogers movie, they had Woody station wagons.
There you go. Point of the matter is, well, in Sky King, that was an airplane. Okay, but point of the matter is, this is all history. And there is a great collection of automobiles out here. You just need to schedule some time. Come out here, 4825 North Sabino Canyon Road. The website is Tucson Auto Museum. Where is it now? I lost it. TucsonAutoMuseum.org. And, yeah, just come on down and do your thing. Bring your phone so you can take some cool pictures, man.
Oh, and good Chilton, stuff. The next time you're in Tucson, come out to the museum.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's... I mean, Bunker and I have been ogling Jack Benny's 12-cylinder Packard over there, as well as some other things. So
they won't let us drive it.
No, they won't.
Hoping they'll let us sit in it.
Anyway, Todd Roberts, get back in there with our guest, Chilton Williamson.
So, Chilton, you have to talk to us about your time when you were on horseback doing pack trips.
Oh, yes. Well, I was just funny. I just got back from Lander, Wyoming, which is about center of the state. It's at the southern end of the Wind River Mountains on the east slope. And I've done a lot of horsepacking up there and a lot of horsepacking in the Wyoming Range, which is directly west of the winds across the Green River Valley. When I look in Kemmer, I really wish I still lived there. my wife isn't. I was perfectly happy living in a town of 2,500, 3,000 people. I like that. But
yep.
My wife, whom I've acquired since then, wants a little more exciting social life. So anyway, we're here in Laramie. But I used to spend a lot of time up in the Wyoming Range, which still is. What I like about the Wyoming Range is it's not infested by Eastern and international backpackers. By that set, they go to the winds, but the Wyoming Range is still very, very empty, except in hunting season. But even then, the hunting camps are few and far between, except for the locals. But the trails that you follow, insofar as you can find them, were all built by the WCC under Roosevelt, and they've all gone back to nature, and so you really need good topo maps. I love topo maps. I can study topo maps all winter long. But I had a very feisty horse at the time, an Arab. Arabs are great in the mountains, and in the desert, of course, because they're very short-footed and they're small horses, and they drink about two-thirds, if not less, water than an ordinary horse, say a quarter horse. And they're great for getting around up there. And some of my best time has been up in the mountains with my horses and picketing them at night and building up a campfire and sitting there with a bottle of whiskey and listening to the coyotes and looking at the sea bears occasionally off at a distance. I just love that. And then, I love it. I don't have horses at the moment. I want to get them back again.
That's life.
And the Wind Rivers are absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
Wet slope.
What is the world without women and horses?
Nothing at all.
And that's
a lot cheaper is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, right. But
yeah, and of course, that's also the theme of my book, The Last Westerner.
But that also makes the Old West come alive.
Yeah.
And that's...
It does. It,
you know, that's one of the... This is a labor of love for all three of us. Our founder started this program many, many, many years ago. And we're just continuing it because it's a labor of love.
Todd, how many years ago? You told me in a previous conversation how many years ago that was. How long was it? I forget.
I think he started it in 2007.
I think it was five.
Or five, one of those. I honestly can't remember.
Yeah, I honestly
don't remember. I started producing the program on commercial radio when it was on commercial radio in 2009. And then when I retired and Amel retired, we took it to the internet. And so we've been going since then.
I've got a question going back to The Last Westerner. Going back to The Last Westerner.
Yes.
I want to know more about the attack on the satellite dishes.
Oh, that. What do you know?
I know what it is, but yeah.
What I'm talking about? I'm talking about the very large array VLA, which is a government. It's run by the government, U.S. federal government. It's located in the plains of San Augustine, which are the border, the northern end of the Gila Wilderness, where I've been many times on horseback because my sister lives overlooking the plains of San Augustine. So west of Magdalena, New Mexico. So west of which Magdalena is on the on I-25, and I don't know how many acres or how many square miles it is, but it's an array of enormous saucers.
It's awesome.
That are mounted on train trucks, and of course the train trucks are on rails, and they can shunt these things all over the plains of San Augustine, and they're adjustable so that the saucers can be tipped to cover one portion of the sky or the other portion of the sky, and what they're looking for is signs of extraterrestrial life. And this is this scene occurs when John Wayne is telling the story in place of a Jeb Ryder, who's incapacitated. He's delirious with some sort of illness. I forget what I have him illness, but he's got some sort of maybe it's flu or something. But he's delirious, and so John Wayne is telling the story, and he calls this the what does he call it? The very very large and airy, because he doesn't understand the words. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's so he's telling the story, and then they're rescued by a family named Quantrill, who are Quantrill is actually based on an old friend of mine, a lawyer who is a lawyer for Catron County, and was busy fighting the he spent most of his career, he's gone back to Oklahoma where his family was, but he spent a lot of his career fighting the environmentalists, and particularly those wanting to shut down mining and timber harvesting to save the spotted owl and so on. So it's mainly a that whole section of the book is mainly meant to be amusing. But that's what the VLA is.
Well, how do we re-enchant the modern world into something that resembles what we love?
I don't have an answer to that.
By gunpoint, that's how we do it.
Well, that's the best answer I can come up with.
I grew up.
This is something interesting. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I came out west to escape what I thought was the collapsing past and embrace a living future. And in my very first novel, which was published in 1987, it's called Desert Light. The protagonist is a disillusioned, successful but disillusioned lawyer from Manhattan who comes out and, as he describes it, his modus to he comes out to race horses in Wyoming, and he talks about he compares the situation to being a survivor of the Titanic sitting in a lifeboat and watching the Titanic sink beneath the waves, meaning Western civilization mm-hmm. going under the water.
Right.
And, the longer I'm out here, more that looks like a prophecy. Mm.
Well, I got to tell you, the city of Tucson, from which where we live, it has a great Western history. But the politicos don't want to...
You wouldn't know it.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it because the politicos don't want to advertise it. And, they got a statue of Pancho freaking Villa down there in the city. And Pancho, come on. Villa attacked the United States, for God's sake.
I know.
Why would you have a statue honoring that particular...
And Father Kino is out in the boondocks. Yeah,
and Father Kino, who founded the Santa Vera Mission, is out in the boondocks, like Bunker said. So this city does not want to address its Old West history. And it's very, very clear about that because, well, when it comes rodeo time, oh, the protests that happen. You know, so...
Oh, really? You know, I didn't realize Tucson was that far gone.
It's been far gone for many years.
I spent part of a year living in Tucson in the early 90s.
Yeah, well...
And I spent... Actually, I've been there many, many, many other times. But I didn't realize it was that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't.
There was back...
You know, talk about replacement theory, you know, that they're talking about in Europe, how the EU is busy letting non-Westerners in from Africa and elsewhere to replace the native population of French and German and English and so on. Well, that's very true. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
But that's what's happening out west here, too.
Exactly.
And that's what's happening in Tucson. Almost everybody, I think I'm right in saying that back in the 1930s, Tucson was something like 35,000 people.
It was.
And now look at it. None of these people is native to Arizona.
Oh,
they come from California. They come from the east.
And they bring their damn plants and ideas with them.
Exactly.
And they're trespassers.
Just south of me here on the Front Range, the Denver Front Range.
All right.
Colorado's turning into a liberal state.
Yeah,
despite the fact that territorially, the vast majority to the east, eastern Colorado was all farmers.
Yeah.
Been there generations.
Yep.
And then to the west, the other side of the Rockies, it's mining and ranching.
Mm-hmm.
And those people go back generations too.
Exactly.
But these new people have come in and they occupy the strip along the Front Range and they're just... They've liberalized it. They've destroyed it. It's just disgusting.
Very much so, and we're going to continue the rant. We have to break for our final commercial here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. Chilton Williamson's our guest. Be back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and a hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's
777-1911. Hello? I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Did you ever try to borrow money on 1,000 acres of dust and sand?
No. Looks like you folks have a real problem here.
This is the Voices of the West.
When it's roundup time in Texas and the bloom is on the sage, then along to be in Texas, back a riding on the range. Just smell the bacon frying when it's sizzling in the pan. Hear the breakfast horn in the early morn. Drink my coffee from a can.
We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, and our guest is Chilton Williamson. He's up in Laramie, Wyoming. He's a Western Writers of America author, and all kinds of other things. He knows how to pack a horse.
And boil coffee.
And boil coffee. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, sheep herder coffee. How do you make that?
Do you know
how you make that?
I don't think I want to know.
But no, it's delicious. You boil water in a pot, yep. Preferably a saltillo, one of those saltillo pots. You boil the water. When it starts to boil, you add the grounds, and then then you let it boil, and then when it's boiling, you break an egg mm-hmm. over the pot,
okay.
And you drain the albumin into the coffee. And you throw the yolk away, let the animals eat it. And the yolk sinks the grounds, and then when you drink the coffee, the albumin gives the coffee a silky quality and a slightly sweet quality. And it's what all the sheep herders up here in Wyoming do, and they're out in their sheep herder wagons. It is delicious. And my wife and I used to carry a couple of whole eggs, especially guarded in cups, and so we could pack it on the horses without breaking the egg. And we get to cap, and then we make sheep herder coffee. It's a wonderful try. You've got to try it.
All right.
I think you left one element out, though. I think you're supposed to use an old used sock and put the coffee in that before you put it in the pot.
I hadn't heard that. I'm not sure I want to go that far.
That's Chester coffee.
That's right.
All right. We've reached the point. We're almost out of time here, Chilton, but Todd Roberts has the final question for you.
Yes.
All right, Chilton.
Yes.
No pressure, but there's plenty. I hope you have 2x4s on your shoulders to handle the weight.
Yeah.
And by the way, we are keeping score, and we do have a memory on the answer to this question. And here it comes. Your favorite Western film or television show?
Pressure.
My Chaparral.
I would say
I'll settle for a book.
That's what I think. Well, it would be, that's hard. It would be a
yep. Yep, one of those.
It's hard to say. It's to sort them out.
It
yeah,
is.
Too many.
Yeah, I don't really have a favorite.
Okay, they're all good.
You have a preference?
They're all excellent.
They all have.
John Wayne came up.
John Wayne came up, obviously.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Okay. What came into your mind when I first asked the question? What was the one that popped in? That first one.
Nothing did, actually.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
Let me throw a curve on that, because we always ask about this, and I love books more. I love film, but I love books more than I love that. Your favorite Western book, or no, I don't like favorite even, but one that you really go back to and repeat.
One of them is Death Comes to the Archbishop.
Oh yes,
by Willa Cather, which is set in the Canyon Country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful book.
It is.
Another is Desert Solitaire.
Yes, oh, I'll be
by Ed Abbey.
Yeah, okay.
That's his best book by far. And then I would say, collectively speaking, all of Laura Ingalls Wilder's books.
Yeah. What about Comes a Horseman?
Hmm?
Comes a Horseman.
Yes, that's a good one.
All right,
Yeah, that's a good one.
Fellas, we are plumb out of time. And Chilton, I want to thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's been a great pleasure to meet you and talk with you.
I've had a wonderful hour. I'm sorry it's over.
Yeah, me too.
I could talk to you guys all night long.
Oh, yeah.
We'll stay open.
Yeah, right. When we find a place that doesn't close, like the museum is now, we'll schedule that away. Because,
oh, that would be fabulous.
I know, because, man, oh, man, you are a wealth of information. And, man, I hope when you come to Tucson, you let us know ahead of time. Bunker and I'll be happy to take you out for breakfast.
I love the area around Tucson, Baba Kivari Peak.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I love that country,
yep.
and I like Nogales.
All right.
And I'll take you down to the Empire Ranch.
Nogales, Mexico is good, too. There used to be a wonderful restaurant just across the border in Nogales.
The Cave Cavern. The Cavern.
No, it's an upstairs restaurant.
No, it's not the one that was in
very,
the...
Very close to the border. It's an upstairs restaurant overlooking... the calle there, and there's a sort of emporium in the bottom, on the bottom floor, and then there's upstairs in there. They have tall French windows and a balcony.
Right.
What's the name of it? anyway, they get their fresh fish in from Rymus, and they have the most fabulous sea bass and so forth.
All right.
But I love that whole country around there. And what's that road that goes over from Nogales to... just north of the border, parallels the border, skirts the heads of the canyons.
Oh, there's 80 that runs through.
With Baba Kivari overlooking it.
Yeah.
That's all beautiful.
All right, sir. We're done. Thank you so much again. Appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you so much. Oh, I'm so grateful.
My pleasure.
For having me on. It's been a lovely hour.
Thank you, Chilton. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
78, 79, 80 O's, and go out there and buy all of Chilton's books because they're good and he needs the money.
So long, folks.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West.